In the early days when Epoxy was getting established, people would have doubts about how strong it was. So we used to make up buckets of these and hand them out at boat shows, particularly when some boat builder was telling us, nah, you can't actually do that. You've got to have nails and fasteners. So we used to give these out to people and say, break them.
We don't want to break them all. You've got to take these on the next
train tour. No, you can break one. You can break one and keep it for a keepsake. That's a really great thing to do when you're building a boat, is to make samples. If all of these break in that mode, I would say it's probably too strong. These are also the worst fillets I've done in my life, because I've never used colloidal silica by itself before. So possibly that's a little bit too big, which means that there's a little bit of a waste of materials.
The fillet's too big?
Perhaps.
Too thick in the middle, it should have been fared.
Yeah.
Material, less weight and more fairing.
Well, what you do is you control it with the radius of the tool that you're putting it on with.
Right.
But
what are you trying to accomplish? That the plywood doesn't break?
Well, the plywood does break.
Yeah.
And the fillet is intact.
So the joint is overstrong, you're saying?
Right? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I tried to break it. Well, it's certainly adequate. What I'm saying is just to keep in mind that testing it and finding out that it doesn't break might mean that it is too heavy, too much material.
Ideally, not necessarily
so, but just to keep it in mind. Well, there's a tendency of boats over time to get more heavy than they need to be.
Well, ideally, you would make samples from just a thin smear to a much thicker and break them all, and the one just beyond where the joint broke and the plywood broke instead.
Yeah.
It was a transition that tells you about where the thickness should be. So holes breaks, but no more fillet than you needed to do that.
Yeah. Like why I'm talking about thinking, even like this is satisfactory. I'd be really happy to build a boat with this size of fillet. And there's a point where you become all too intellectual about it. But just to keep it in mind to occasionally do a test of what you're doing. If you're using something else, like maybe you're using wood flour for the first time, you can always make up a few fillets and just see how it goes.
This looks like a three-quarter. When I bought plans, that's what the guy said, use three-quarter.
Yeah, there's actually a rule about that. The rule is that when you're doing a fillet, that the radius of the fillet is three times the smaller plywood thickness. Yeah. So
if you've got quarter-inch material, you want a three-quarter-inch radius.
It's basically three times the thickness of a thinner ply. That's actually quite nice too, because if you're using solid wood cleating, the gluing surface has to be three times as well, right? So it needs to be three times on both sides. If you're going for absolute lightweight construction, that's of course what you do. But most of us are buying timber in commercial sizes. Starts to be extra cost or extra labour to take things down. So if we've got something like I can't quite talk your language, but if you've got something like a 2x1, maybe it's not worth in certain situations turning it into a 3/4 by 3/4. You know, maybe it's better just to accept it as a 3/4 by 1 3/4 real size, and accept that, or use it as some feature of the furniture or so on. Yeah, like if you've got a bunk top, you don't want a squirrely little cleat there. You want something with a bit of depth so it looks okay. With butt straps,
show us your butt strap.
Show us your butt strap. If it's here. Where'd it get to? Oh, yeah, I didn't clean it up. Yeah. But have a good flex of that. It's 20 times the ply thickness for the width of the butt strap.
It's forward. 10 on either side.
Yeah, so 10 on either side. Yeah, with scarf, it's pretty well known that you use 6 as the sort of standard, and it can go up to 8 or 10 depending on how paranoid you are, you know? Like for mask making with the bubble guts, we found that 6 are quite acceptable, particularly if you put some epoxy on the end grain. The way we deal with end grain is we'll get all the pieces ready, we'll mix up the epoxy, we'll brush it on the end grain, then we'll add the thickening powder, which takes a few minutes, you know, stir that in well, and then add that to the joint, and then you've actually got quite a well-saturated joint and so on, and it fits in the same time frame. All of my designs use butt straps. The reason I do it is because they're neat on the outside. I find scarves really hard to make, it's really hard to make scarves neat on the outside because there's always some little misalignment, either in height or just the actual planing of the scarf. This is great for sheet plywood boats like what I'm interested in. If you're going to build a clinker boat, of course it's all got to be scarves, because otherwise you have 10 million butt straps on the inside of the boat, which is really unsightly. I also think a neatly turned out butt strap is much better than a badly achieved scarf. Yeah, and also I know that the butt strap will work 100% of the time when I send a plan out.
Have you ever fooled with the, we call around here a Payson
joint? Yeah, I use it for repairs quite a lot, because what you can do is, like the real advantage of it is you can make a little hollow there without actually going through the top veneer. And then when you put glass in that, it brings up to the HUD up to the original level. And when you varnish the lot, it just looks like it's all varnished. So, yep. Yeah, the glass on the either side type joint. The Payson joint, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just find it so much more fiddly compared to doing a butt strap. A butt strap, you put the two pieces down, make the butt strap, put it on top, draw a pencil line around the whole thing, draw the centre line, put the glue on it, put it down, put a weight on it, walk away. And it doesn't take much more time than that. But the Payson joint, it's a bit more stuffing around. The scarf joint is a bit more stuffing around. So.
And you never get a crack along on the outside of the boat when it bends?
Not so far. Like, I worried about that at the beginning too. The other thing is the butt strap doesn't quite need to go up to the internal structure as well. So if it's joining the... If you're doing the bottom of the boat, you've got to join there. You've got your chine logs running through like that. The butt strap can be sort of 6-8 millimetres, a quarter of an inch away. Yeah, and I've never found a crack or a leak. And no one's complained about them any yet on their boats.
When you put the sheets together, do you put epoxy in the butt?
Usually I don't worry, because it seems to get squeezed in there by the butt strap itself.
Do you ever fiberglass tape the outside then?
As boats get bigger and it starts to be more of a concern, they tend to be glassed anyhow. But for the little boats that I've focused on so far, no, I don't specify anything at all. It might have been bad luck too, or it might have been some specific feature of the boat. Like, that's always the problem with designing boats. When you get feedback, you generally have to wait for two or three instances of it to come back. One of the things too I wanted to just mention was that when I was talking about fillets and saying that it's very easy for the strength and weight of things to creep upwards all the time, one really good example of that is kayak building, because there are a number of people in the field all working away. When I started with boat building in 88, 89, we built lots of stitch and glue boats. And they were just glass taped at the seam. A little bit down the line, sort of maybe 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, boats started to be fiberglass on the outside more routinely. Right, so usually using 4 ounce or 6 ounce glass, usually 4 ounce. Now, a lot of the kayak build plans, or not a lot of them, but some of them are starting to specify glass inside and out for a plywood boat. And I think back to, 20 odd years ago, or just barely 20 years ago, and we didn't need all that glass at all. So I think for regular use, this is a lot of extra materials, it's also a lot of extra labour, and for anyone who's glassed the inside of a boat where there's chine logs and shear clamps and things like that, it's also a lot of suffering. That we have one class of trailer sailor, a little boat with a cabin. It's a catamaran. It's called the Jarcat, designed by Ross Turner. His smallest boat is 17 feet long, lives on a trailer, it's got a double berth down in the cabin, it's got cooking facilities and so on. It's built of 4mm plywood, same as a lot of the sea kayaks. It's all glassed, however, and he uses 2-ounce glass. Now, if the jarcat can survive with 4mm ply and 2-ounce glass, then a sea kayak is certainly going to survive. If someone's going to head a long way offshore in a sea kayak, maybe it's another story and some insurance is worthwhile, but specifying it in a regular plan sort of shows this creep taking effect. So the boats are getting heavier, more complicated, more expensive, and newbie builders are being told that this is the best way to do it. Could be, but you know, the question is how far to go on the liability. The other thing to note there is that the jarcat is quite a big 16, 17 foot boat, and it's using only 2-ounce glass. And as a result of that, I've started to think that 2-ounce glass is probably all you need for most boats that we're interested in. Availability can be a problem, of course, and if it's not available, you know, go for the 4-ounce or the 6-ounce or whatever you can get. But if the 2-ounce is there, it will very much do the job, because it brings out a sort of interesting little bit of theory. And the theory is to work out how, what you do is you sit down and work out how something will break, and then you do something to prevent that mode from happening, right? What glass does really well is it defeats one of the old problems of timber, and that is that timber will split very easily. You can get an axe and go chonk and it just splits. But if you try and break it any other way, it's a hell of a big job. So if you get a piece of timber and put glass on it, it's not going to split. The other thing that glass is really good at is that it's got huge abrasion resistance, and it also adds some amount of strength to the structure. So with any boat, the main reason we're glassing it is to get the abrasion resistance, and then we're getting a number of other things as well. And what seems to happen, even with very light glass weights like the jarcats of 2 ounce, is that anything that hits it will skid off rather than embed and dig a big gouge. So the presence of glass is perhaps more important than the weight of the glass. You know, that's my thinking at the moment. Another thing about avoiding fracture modes, designing to avoid fracture modes, is the use of fastenings. I generally don't like fastenings in boats, because with fastenings in boats, it reduces the weak point where moisture can get in possibly. It also makes repairs a lot simpler. You can just grab a router or a saw or whatever and cut huge chunks off the boat and then glue straight back onto the old surfaces. But I just talked about one of the things that glass can do really nicely is prevent splitting. So in a place where there might be some splitting, you add a bit of glass and the problem can be solved. Now, with a piece of timber in a corner, there's no way it can split because it's got plywood on both sides. But if you've got the bottom of a boat and you've got a runner on the bottom of the boat, or you've got side of a boat and you've got a gunwale on the side of the boat, it's quite easy for that to split away from the hull. For the bottom skid, if it's a larger boat, I'll normally specify that they should be glassed, because the glass because the glass threads go across the grain of the timber, there's just no physical way it can split. With gunwales and so on, I don't recommend that you need fastenings for the whole gunwale, but just at the end, because the gunwale will not be very vulnerable to splitting at midpoint, but it might be vulnerable to being split at the end, sort of hit up against the wharf or something like that. So just one screw in the end can prevent that. The thing that taught me that was a friend of mine made all these lovely wooden, you know, horn cleats, and he epoxied them on. As soon as I saw that, I said, I know the reasoning, the fasteners have to be there. Yeah, because when you have the fasteners going through, it can't split through there. And a lot of the old-fashioned details of boats work that way, like I'm just thinking of some peak colours details where he often has a slightly raised rail along the edge of the deck, and he'll cut a fair lead shape out of it. It would be really sensible to put a screw each side. And I think what he does is he bends a bit of metal through there and fastens it with screws each side. So it solves two functions at once. Colours details are the best in the world. Fantastic guy. Necessarily, yeah. But if it was all vertical, then those bits would break off. It would break through there and there. But you're right. The point is...
If the grain was horizontal like that, then the whole top would pop off.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, like normally cleats will be bolted on. But the point is to be intellectual about it, to actually work out what the failure mode is and then try to avoid the failure mode in some way. If you've got a piece of the boat that's splitting, you can put some plywood on it as well. That's another way to do it, or you can glass it. Another example of the failure mode is fir ply, the way that it checks. You know, even the lightest glass will stop it from checking. Yeah. You know, the 2 ounce glass.
I remember hearing just a prophet.
People say that all the time. It's not true.
Okay.
Yeah. Another thing I'd like to touch on a bit too is there's also a lot of talk on the net about someone worrying about the strength or stiffness of something and someone else saying glass it. Right? Or people trying to save weight by making the timber thinner and maintaining the strength by glassing it. It's usually a flawed approach. Glass is approximately between five and eight times the weight of timber. Everyone who's actually weighed a panel before glassing it and then glasses it and then weighs it again is always shocked. But there's this idea of negligible weight. If you're worried, like for really lightweight boat building, at the moment there are lots of people building cedar strip boats, but they're using 3 or 4 millimeter strips and lots of and not changing the glass thickness. I think it makes a lot more sense to maintain the timber thickness and just go really light with the glass. Yeah. Like I once built a canoe out of balsa strip, and probably most of you know that. But as a joke, it was almost as a joke. This guy came into the workshop. And he said, I'm an agent for balsa. We're growing it up in New Guinea. I can give you some at a reasonable price. And I said, yeah. So I decided to build a strip plank boat. It was a Rushton Wee Lassie. Straight. There's a bit of a controversy about which lines that you can find for the boat that are the real ones. But I used the ones out of Rushton, His Life and Times, which was supposedly taken off from the boat in the Smithsonian, but there's also some controversy about whether he did the right job or not. But I built it out of 7 millimeter, a little bit more than 6 quarter inch balsa strip. I covered it in 0.7 ounce glass. For the bottom of the boat, where I thought it would contact the ground, I put a second layer of glass there. The inside of the boat, I put a second layer of glass where I was sitting and put my feet and so on. It's a little 10.5 foot boat. My idea about it was just to do something really off the wall, really fun, and after a year I'd end up chucking the remainder into a dumpster and saying goodbye. It was a lot of fun. Four and a half years later, I've sold that boat for more money than I've ever made from any boat that I've built. The damn thing just wouldn't die. It was a bit susceptible to being punctured, but I just got used to always putting it down upside down with its gunnels and so on. So the weight of the 10.5 foot boat was 12 pounds.
Wow.
Right? It was prone to denting, it was prone to puncturing from small stones and things like that, but as long as you pull it out of the water and put it down upside down, it'll be okay. Far beyond what I expected from something that should be just thrown away. And that's a useful approach too. If you find yourself in a situation where you can really be off the wall with something, why not try?
Nick Shea had a two-issue article about the nymph canoe in Wooden Boat about 6 or 8 months ago. When the boat's going to weigh 20-25 pounds, even if I increase it to 13 foot,
yeah.
At some point I'm going to be wanting to add flotation to it.
And if I make the wood thicker, then the flotation is built into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just gave me the figure that the glass is 5 times heavier. If you want more stiffness, make the wood thicker, not more
exactly.
glass.
Exactly. Yes.
The thing about glass on wood, it's a monocoque thing, just the same as glassing foam. And you want to stiff the foam section. The skin's on this tensile skin. Somebody else made the point that you've got your lap strake rangely with ribs every 6 inches. You've got your guide boat with ribs every 3 inches. Now you've got your canoe with fiber, or your small double paddle canoe with fiberglass, and your ribs are a quarter millimeter apart in the transverse strands of the glass.
Yeah,
you've still got ribs for the transverse structure, but it's the fabric of the glass.
Yeah.
And actually the longitudinal glass isn't doing a whole lot for you.
Yeah. Well, that
the wood has the fiber running longitudinal.
Yeah. Yeah. You avoid the motor fracture by designing for the motor fracture.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is the history of boat construction. That when you build a carvel built boat or a clinker built boat in the traditional way, the ribs are there to stop the timber from slipping.
Yeah.
Right. With the modern boats, we can do that with plywood because you've got grain running in two directions. So it can't possibly split. With cedar strip, we'll put glass on both sides and that prevents it from splitting. So it's exactly buying into the same thing. I made this sample of a traditional boat. Right, so those are the planks, those are the ribs. This is the problem that traditional boats have been struggling against.
You see how it twists or shears.
That is a problem.
That is a problem. I've just lost one of my ribs. But the point is, that's the motor of failure, right? And the reason the boat, a truly traditionally built boat, avoids that is by having caulking in between boats. And the caulking being tamped in the right way gives the plank something to press on, because as the twisting distortion occurs, the planks get closer together, at least on one side of the boat. So Herreshoff and others started putting in diagonal strapping, a piece of bronze outside the ribs but inside the planking that runs at those sort of angles. And it's just the same as putting a diagonal bar on a gate in your garden. Yeah, exactly. And in really traditional ships, the main bulkheads will be made of two layers put on at diagonals, right? So that they won't do that. But still, because the body of the boat is built in that rectilinear way, it's still going to have twists. And that's why old boats have often very much improved by putting a plywood deck on them. Because at least you've got one panel that won't distort so regularly, and it'll help support the rest of the structure. Sometimes you hear of people glassing older boats. That can work too. Veneering, putting veneers on at 45 degrees, that works as well. Like cold moulding over the old boat. But I'm also always a bit torn with that, because sometimes, you know, the boat has some value as it is, and not to muck around with it too much. But where it gets difficult is where the person who owns it wants to do something with it, but they don't have the skills. So, yeah, I heartache over that one regularly.
I built a sailing boat, 18 foot, looks like a drift boat with a little tiny boat.
Right, so the deck itself is made of strip.
The foredeck I did through, I found that leaving it out this whole summer in the water, the sun really got on this dark belly and caused my strips to crack apart along
the... The modern glued construction really relies upon the timber being stable, because it's all encapsulated in the epoxy. Right? So the more that you do that with the structure that you've got, the better behaved it's going to be. So you can get in underneath and seal it all as much as possible.
I'll paint it underneath.
Yeah, painting's not good enough. People often say, you know, epoxy has allowed a lot of strength. It's rubbish. You need fibre in there, because the epoxy itself elongates really easily. You know, like masks, which are always up in the sun, don't suddenly start failing. Because they've been built with epoxy. Yeah.
So you're thinking moisture is my bigger problem there.
Yeah, I think so.
So if I put a heater in it for a month before I do anything to it, you know, inside the boat,
then it'll be 10 times the problem.
10 times.
10 times the problem. Well, if you dry out the timber really thoroughly,
well,
and then it'll shrink, and then you'll put more stress into the structure and it'll slip more.
So you're saying don't heat it before I glass
it? Don't heat it.
Just let it sit in the garage for...
Just sit in the garage, let it stabilise to the local conditions and so on, and then do it all.
Glass it, and yeah. Whatever moisture's in it sort of stays there.
It's meant to be there.
And then I hate the thought of putting canvas and paint on it, but I've got to keep water out of it. Water
yeah. But like if you think of canvas and paint and the failure mode idea, the thing we're trying to stop is the timber from splitting. The canvas will not be capable of doing anything with that. All that will manage to do is cover it up. Right? So that's not a solution.
Wouldn't that stop the leak though, the matter of the timber?
But that brings me to think of something Francis Herreshoff once said. There are two places you're going to have holes in the boat. If you have a hole in the bottom, you've got to bail it out. If there's a hole in the deck, it gets everything wet on the way through, and then you still have to bail it out. Yeah, and that was really true of boats before there were plywood decks. And they were all canvassed as well. So it can prevent a minor problem. But as far as something that's sort of structural and significant, then they had to turn to woodworking skills and re-canvas it after. Yeah. So, does everyone want to keep going a little bit more, or are you starting to feel a bit tired? And
are you up to it?
I'd like to have a toilet break.